Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
This is Seth Gilliam.
Hey, this is Holland Roden.
My name is Kiahu Kuhuanui.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Ponzio.
I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hey, it's Ronnie Adams.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh.
Ha-ha!
This is Jeff Davis, and you're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Cause baby, now we got bad blood. You know it used to be mad love. So take a look what you've done. Cause baby, now we got bad blood. Hey! Now we got problems, and I don't think we can solve them. You made a really deep cut, and baby, now we got bad blood. Hey!
Hello all, welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, episode 94. As the hiatus winds down, we're up to our last major character analysis episode. We've been looking at some of the show's major characters over the past few months for Karen's wonderful feature articles exploring the last of the original main cast, I suppose you could call it, because we've had a few revolving door characters in and out of those main credits, but we've been looking at the main four that have been sticking around. So we've done Scott, Lydia, Styles, and now it is time for the one and only Derek Hale, which is very exciting, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. So first of all, hello Karen.
Hi.
Hi, why did you save Derek Hale for Lucky Last?
I don't really know if it was a conscious decision. Like I said before, I really wanted to do Scott and Lydia first because I felt most connected to their journey. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of just did Styles after that because I think he was just the one that popped up next in my head. But I'm kind of glad I saved for Derek for last because his journey is actually probably the most interesting. I think he's the one that's changed the most personality-wise, mm-hmm. So it's kind of a good last hurrah.
So it's not that you like him the least?
Oh, absolutely not.
Sure. Okay. I'll
Derek.
Believe that. Yeah. All right. Anyway, if you wanted to come and talk to us about this episode or any other episodes, past or future, you can reach us on our Twitter, which is NATW Podcast. You can email us on natwpodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Tumblr at Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast on Tumblr. You can also hang out on our Instagram, which is NATW Podcast, which should be seeing a relative bit of activity in the upcoming summer as we journey out various fandom things like Comic-Con and Indie Pop-Con and when the premiere happens. Not that there's like a magical premiere event that we go to, as far as I know. Would be nice.
Well, I'll just take selfies.
Yeah, we'll take
TV
screen caps and like, yeah. We'll be around on Instagram over the summer.
Courtney's
so
doing a bunch of
there
giveaways too, so definitely.
Oh, true.
There.
Yeah, you can go over to the Instagram to win some autographed cards from us. It's a lead up to the season 5 premiere as well. So that is the thing that you can do. So as I've mentioned, we're going to be talking about Derek Hale's character arc from day one till now, basically, on this episode. And you can head over to Hyperball to read Karen's feature article discussing the character and sort of just telling his story, which was very nice. And I suppose Karen will take us through the arc as she has written it. But first of all, we want to talk about how big a Derek Hale fan we are, basically, because, you know, everyone's got their favourite and less favourite characters. And Karen left out for last, so clearly she isn't that into him. But yeah, Karen... Karen, on a scale of the main characters that we've talked about so far, or on a scale of the show's changing time, how big a Derek Hale fan are you? Where does this character stand for you in comparison to others, or just him standing alone, I suppose?
He stands alone off in the corner. Lurking? No. I'm going to avoid that question because I don't think I can, like, compare him. But I will say that sometimes I forget how far he's come from season one, and writing this article definitely reminded me of that. And I think his, you know, like I said, his journey is one of the most interesting ones and one of the most complicated and dynamic. And I think that the Derek we see now is a far cry from the Derek we saw in season one. So I really enjoy that about him, and I really like, you know, I've always liked him from the very beginning. I remember there was one episode, it was night school, when he was attacked by Peter, who we didn't know was Peter at that point, and he, like, dropped to the ground with, like, blood coming out of his mouth, and I remember just being like, if Derek dies, I'm gone. I'm done. That's it. Like, I mean, I've loved him for a long time, but I really enjoyed the Derek that we have now because he's so zen, he's so wise, and I think that it's just a testament to everything that he's been through and how far he's come.
Okay. I hated him the first time I watched season one. The first time I watched season one, I was like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? But that was only as far as, like maybe halfway through season one or to the end of season one, the first time I watched it. And then in season two, I kind of liked him. And then since then, like rewatching, etc., was the same as Isaac. I hated Isaac the first time I watched season two.
I remember that.
I was just like, you are terrible and I hate you, but now I love him. Rewatching, Derek is like my favorite character on the show. Like 100% he is my favorite character. It is hard to compare them because he does stand alone in the corner. But he is my favorite character. I'm not, like, super bummed about, like, him not being around because, I take those things sort of into practical consideration. But I do adore him. I think he is definitely my favorite. Every second he's on screen delights me. And it's not even because I'm, like, super crazy. Oh, my God, he's hot. Like, I mean, he is kind of. But I just love him. I find him hilariously funny, which I'm not sure if that's quite the point, but I feel like it is at times. I feel like I think that he is quite meant to be just this very sort of undercurrent of ridiculousness to the character, which I love. Yeah. And when he sort of starts getting to express that more openly because he chills out, I love that. But right from day one, I feel like that there's been great work done with that character because he has changed, but it doesn't feel like a different character. It feels like every aspect of who he is now was always there. But what you saw at first was it was just so wrapped up in his own relative recent, like, personal misery and stress and no trust and all of that kind of stuff. Like, right from day one, I feel like you could tell what was a front. Like, I feel like they knew what the character was without all his baggage, and Tyler Hoechlin was playing the character, you know, who the character truly was with the baggage on top, if you know what I mean. I don't feel like it's been a change in his character. Like, I don't feel like it's been like, oh my god, he's changed so much, as in this is unrecognizable. I feel like his natural self was always there, and now because he's chilling the hell out, it gets to come out more, which is really satisfying, basically. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that makes sense.
Yes.
So I really love him. I would say, if I had, you know, gun to my head, favorite character on the show is Derek.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. all right, so let's just jump right into season one. And basically, I remember a long time ago, I wrote an article and I made some mention of Derek being an antagonist. And people jumped all over me for that. And I stand by that, absolutely. In season one, I think Derek was an antagonist. He wasn't a villain, he wasn't a bad guy, but he caused a lot of problems for Scott, and you didn't know his intentions right away. And I think in hindsight, it's obvious, you know, how much he cared about, I guess, yes, gaining power and everything, but protecting Scott and wanting him to be part of his pack, not for nefarious reasons like Peter had, but for genuine reasons. And, you know, we kind of forget that, but Derek in the beginning was kind of a dick. Like, let's be real.
Yeah, because he was miserable and like, he just found out that his sister, his last remaining relative, you know, given what we know now, like, his last remaining relative, you know, that he'd been living with, that he'd escaped this, like, trauma of Beacon Hills with, had come back and been killed. And so that's got to suck. And then he's like, oh, this child, I got to be responsible for a new werewolf, if you know what I mean. Yes, yes, he was a dick. And, I mean, is there ever an excuse for being a dick? I don't know. But if there was, he was definitely in a bad state and he was trying to – I feel like season one Derek was a lot – like, he felt a lot younger and he was just basically trying to pull up this position of – no, I don't think he was trying to gain power, but he was trying to look like he was in control and feel in control, where he wasn't. He was never, you know, he wasn't an alpha before. He probably hadn't, like, trained any other werewolves or anything like that before. He was completely sort of second string, you know, family werewolf who'd gone through all of this trauma and comes, you know, basically, you know, he had to pretend like he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely had his reasons for acting the way that he did, and I don't think it's a surprise that he acted the way he did. I mean, he doesn't trust anybody for good reason. You know, everything that happened with Kate, it's believable that he would keep everyone at arm's length. So I think seeing Scott and seeing how much of a wild card he was in season one, not being able to control the shift, not being able to control his feelings about Allison, Derek had to be really careful. And so he kept a lot of secrets. I think since season one, he learned that keeping secrets, especially from Scott, not such a good idea. He's much more of a team player now. But back then, I mean, totally reasonable for why he acted the way that he did.
Yeah, I mean, it's not understandable once you know his story. But yes, I do agree that he certainly, you know, to the viewer and to Scott, you know, for the first season, we kind of, he's kind of this thorn in Scott's side, really. This, like, guy who's just, like, hanging around, keeps, like, almost dying on them, and they keep being like, now we got to be responsible for this guy, like, if you know what I mean, like, you know, getting shot and get all of this, you know, getting in the way, basically, like, he sort of, you know, I understand his position as an antagonist. We know, is he the, you know, is he the creepy alpha, is he, what's going on, you know, who is he a bad guy? I understand that it's painted like that, but it's sort of almost impossible for me to look back and kind of look at that arc objectively without the idea of what was going on for him underneath, really, and what we know about him now. So it's actually quite difficult to kind of view that, and now I just laugh and laugh and laugh when I watch him in season one because he's just such a grumpy baby, and I'm just like,
oh,
Derek, chill.
He looks so young, too.
Yeah,
like, I'm so surprised by how much older he looks. One thing I will say that I really miss from season one is the lurking Derek, because him just showing up in shadowy corners is like the greatest thing they've ever done. It's so funny.
They had to know.
I know. I know.
Like, it can't be just like, oh, this is really serious. Like, I refuse to believe that. Like,
yeah,
it's so good.
I mean, in season one, they were much more lighthearted, I think. You know, when we season one and two had a very different tone from season three, where we started getting a lot more deeper and realistic. And I think that was a good change for the show. Shows need to evolve. But season one and two, it's definitely that sort of like, this is a serious situation, but we're going to throw in some, you know, intentional, unintentional humor. And I think that is one of the best things about Derek and Tyler Hoechlin, is that he can do that sort of like, I'm really serious, but I know that this is still funny anyway type of thing. And I do miss that side of Derek.
Yeah, I definitely, I think Tyler Hoechlin is actually a great comedic actor. And I feel like that they've played that a lot, like, a lot. And I love that. I mean, season one, I don't know, like, when do you feel like that it becomes clear that he's, like, not necessarily a bad guy. Like, that he's not actually, like, going to be a problem. I mean, he's always a problem causer, but you know what I mean? Like, that he is not on the side of evil.
I think maybe once Peter is introduced, like, obviously throughout the season, we slowly begin to trust Derek a lot more. But once Peter's introduced, I think that is the most obvious, like, difference. Like, you have Derek, who's sort of gray area. We're not entirely sure what he's up to. He could have ulterior motives. But then there's Peter. And Peter is definitely a bad guy. And he's definitely somebody we have to keep our eye on. So I think Peter's introduction kind of steps Derek to the side where, you know, it's more obvious that he's with Scott and the others at this point. But I would argue that even season two, he's still causing problems as always.
He's a risk. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And he hasn't, I don't think it's until near the end of season two where he really starts to realize what he's done. That things kind of become a lot clearer for him and for us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, during season one, it's also kind of interesting to think, like, what would have happened to Scott as a werewolf? Like, if it's very hard to say, like, if Derek hadn't been around, because obviously if the Hales hadn't been there, Scott wouldn't have been a werewolf anyway, because he wouldn't have got bitten by Peter. But if Derek had still, you know, it's an impossible question because Derek wouldn't have still been in New York, you know, because Peter wouldn't have been an alpha because he wouldn't have been there to kill Laura. But say Scott got turned into a werewolf without Derek being around and not knowing things about, like, you know, who bit him, like, who to be looking for, like, the alpha and, like, what's going to kill him, what's going to help him control the ship. Like, what do you think would have happened to Scott without a werewolf presence, an already developed werewolf presence when he turned?
Gosh. I don't know. Like, this is going to sound really bad, and I swear to God, I don't mean it like this. But I'm not entirely sure, in the beginning, how much Derek actually helped him. Because, I'm sorry.
No,
let
true.
Me explain. Because he kept all those secrets, and he was more, like, frustrating than anything, because it was like, you need to explain yourself. Like, this is all new to Scott, and it's not new to Derek. And so, I mean, I think it's definitely good that Derek was there a few times to really help Scott, especially when he started going up against the hunters and everything. I definitely think Scott was better off with Derek there, for sure. But I think maybe he could have found his own way to deal with things. I mean, he ended up doing that in his own way anyway, because Derek tried to teach him, you know, his anchor, and that turned out not to be Scott's anchor, and Scott sort of had to figure out on his own that Allison was his anchor. So Scott was, I think, a good werewolf. It just took a little while for him to get his footing.
True. That's true. And I mean, because they kind of put Derek in the stakes pretty fast. Like, it's only, like, you know, the 4 or 5 episodes into season one where, you know, he gets shot by Kate, and then, like, Stiles and Scott have to try and save him. And they're like, yeah. And, I mean, there's many times when they're like, should we just let Derek die? Is he actually on our side or of any use? But they do keep trying to help him, which is nice. And, I mean, I think that's probably a sign straight off that this is going to be one of the main characters that we are going to end up rooting for. So, and you said as well, like, that during season one, you're like, if Derek dies, I'm out. Like, so how did you feel about all of those kind of, we don't like you, but we're saving each other's lives that happened in the early days?
Oh,
like, before it was like an unconditional relationship, which it kind of is now, if you know what I mean.
Right. It was so confusing, especially because, like, I watched the show from the beginning. Like, I saw the pilot airing after the MTV Awards, and I was, you know, not in the fandom. And I don't even think I had started at Hypeable yet. So, well, no, because the show's older than how long I've been there. So I was like very secluded and I didn't really have anybody to talk to or anybody to kind of bounce those ideas off of. Well, you know, is Derek a good guy? Do we really care about him? It was all just me inside my head. And so I kept going back and forth so much being like, look, dude, you need to talk to this kid and like explain some things to, oh my God, he's trying to save their lives and now he looks like he's dead. I just can't handle this. It was like emotional whiplash and it was very difficult because you did care for him. You did like his snark. You did like his angsty sort of brooding and yet you didn't know if he was going to end up being a bad guy. And I think if he had ended up being a bad guy, it would have felt like a betrayal. So I'm glad that they didn't go that route, but it was hard for a while.
Yeah. And then I know we've talked quite a bit, like, you know, we recapped all those episodes and back in the day we would have talked quite a bit about the moment, I guess, in season one where he becomes the alpha, like where he's been, you know, trying, he's been telling Scott the whole season, oh, you might be able to, like, the only thing I've ever heard of that might cure you of being a werewolf is killing the alpha that bit you. And then they get to the point where they sort of, they corner Peter, and then at the last moment, Derek kind of kills him. And that caused quite a bit of confusion, I guess, or debate about, like, what Derek was doing the whole time, about, like, whether he was, you know, lying to Scott or whether it was like a heat of the moment thing where he was just taken over by it and, you know, he was just so angry and that he couldn't control himself basically and did it. How do you feel about him killing Peter the first time now?
Now in hindsight?
I suppose, or just, or at the time or in just in general, like his becoming the alpha, like his kill. Do you think he killed Peter because he wanted to be an alpha? Do you think Peter, he killed Peter because he was so angry at Peter, if you know what I mean?
I think both. I mean, I think he definitely wanted to become alpha. I think not in a greedy sort of power hungry way like Peter was, but in a way that maybe he just thought, you know, that was his role. He could do it. He knew how it worked. I mean, better him become
like you shouldn't rightfully be Peter's, you mean, like
that. And like, you know, would you rather Derek be alpha or Scott? I mean, obviously that question, the answer to that question is very different now, but back then Scott still didn't know what he was doing. So I would have rather Derek take on that than Scott get it. So I think, you know, back then I did feel betrayed and I was really afraid that he was going to be the bad guy for season two. I actually said that out loud to, you know, I think my mom was watching it with me or something. I was like, what if he's the villain for season two? I don't know if my heart can handle this because I really like him at this point. But looking back now, I definitely see that it wasn't that kind of power grab. I think that, you know, he was misguided, but still he was never a villain.
Yeah. I think, you know, to me, it did seem like a real heat of the moment thing. Like, I don't think he'd been tricking Scott the whole time, if you know what I mean. I don't think he'd been tricking Scott, but I think something instinctual happened to him, you know, when they had that confrontation, and he was like, oh, I'm going to kill you, if you know what I mean. Like, maybe some sort of crazy psychic part of him knew that Scott, you know, wasn't going to be cured and that he should be, you know, and that him killing Peter would make him like a normal alpha and that, you know, Scott had this magical future as werewolf Jesus. But, you know, that's a random, you know, wild card theory. But yeah, to me, it always really seemed like a heat of the moment. You know, not like he'd been misleading Scott purposely the whole time. Not like he'd been, Scott, we're going to get you to kill Peter and then you won't be a werewolf anymore. But secretly, I'm going to kill him because I want to be the alpha. It really seemed like, you know, in the moment, and he might have had a lot going on in that moment. But yeah, I don't feel like he was being crafty or anything like that. I don't know if Derek has that capacity.
Yeah, I never really saw him as being that manipulative.
No, so not at all.
I can see that. I think it was a very genuine thing. But let's talk about season two, the fact that he is the alpha now and that he starts building his pack, which, oh boy, eye roll. We know how that goes. But he bites Jackson, Isaac, Erica, and Boyd. And Jackson's sort of, you know, we'll talk about him. But Isaac, Erica, and Boyd become his betas. And he tries to lead this group of teenagers who are really down on their luck, sort of on the outskirts of society and of the schools, like, you know, popular groups and stuff like that. And he tries to train them, and I think in some ways he succeeds. He definitely knows what he knows how to be a werewolf. Like, he's been that way his entire life. He grew up with his family. He knows what he's doing, but he never really inspired 100% of loyalty from his betas, like Scott sort of does automatically. And I think that was an interesting aspect, because I guess I kind of expected him from the beginning to, okay, he's the alpha, okay, he gets his pack, maybe they're gonna have to fight him or something. I never really expected it to sort of, like, fall apart organically.
He's so bad at it, though, Karen. Like, it's just unbelievable how bad he is. And it's, I mean, I think it's fantastic, but it's just...
He means well.
Like, it's very clear that the show never intended him to succeed. They weren't like, oh yeah, Derek's the alpha and now we've got bored of this, if you know what I mean. Like, it was very clear that he was never meant to succeed as the alpha, that it was a bad choice and it was going to, you know, come back in his face, basically. And I think it was done very well in terms of him just basically losing control of his life and everyone else's. You know, and that has some pretty depressing consequences. But it's just, yeah, I mean, I think that it's a really good example of, you know, because at the very first, if we're talking about the alpha journey in general, the very first impression we get of alpha is, you know, Peter, for example. We don't even really learn how he becomes the alpha. We don't learn that much about why, like, Laura... you know, about what it meant for Laura to be the alpha, and that's how Peter turned. You know, all we saw of Peter was the big monster wolf. We didn't know if being an alpha in general was a good thing. Like, if that was, like, the most evil wolf, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And then we see, oh, kind of good guy, Derek, he can be the alpha, and that's not that bad. And then obviously we go forward later on to Scott, and, you know, it's basically a journey of, you know, whether the alpha power is a good or a bad thing, and then how it can be used, you know, the best and worst possible, I think. And Derek is kind of the middle ground there of a not a bad person, not a power hungry and bad person, more just a very, like, lonely and stupid person, compared to someone who actually naturally knows how to lead in a good way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the Isaac and Erica and Boyd stuff is, like, it's just a sign of how immature Derek is, really, that those are the kind of people that he thought would be, you know, good. Like, he picked people, it's not great, like, it's not super healthy. He picked people who he thought would be, like, he thought he was helping them, but he also picked people who were really vulnerable in certain ways, who would, you know, have the most reason to need, number one, the most reason to need a physical transformation, but also the most reason to need somewhere to belong and somewhere to, I guess, you know, somewhere to belong and somewhere to improve, and the most cause to be grateful to him, if you know what I mean, the most cause to be grateful and loyal to him. And I don't think it's a conscious manipulation, but it's not a super healthy choice. It was just stupid, and I think everyone in the fandom agrees now that it was just stupid, basically. So
yeah, well,
I don't know.
The other thing is, I think it was totally necessary too. I mean, we were talking about the transition from between alphas, from, you know, Peter's very, very bad alpha to Scott's very, very good alpha, and Derek being in between. I think this was also a transition for Derek too. He had to fail as an alpha in order to become a better person and a better werewolf, you know, as a beta or an omega, however we end up classifying him, because if, you know, if he had never tried that, if he had never been the alpha and tried to get his own pack, he never would have known whether or not he was good at it. And I think that always would have been in the back of his head. And yeah. So he failed and he knew, okay, this is not for me. And it allowed him to continue growing and becoming more and more Zen, because we love Zen, Derek. So, you know, I think as much as it sucks for Derek and for everything that he's been through, I think all of those really terrible things had to happen for him in order to get him to where he is by the end of season 4.
Mm. And then the big clash in season 2, I suppose, is the Kanema, obviously, Jackson, because Derek tried to do the bite on him and it no worky, basically, because Jackson has a horrible soul. My trash baby. So Jackson had all of his teen angst stopping him from being a normal werewolf. And you must have to have a lot of damage going on in order to get to Kanema status, because, you know, it's not like Isaac was super healthy, you know, and True. He still managed to be a normal werewolf. But Jackson had all of this whatever inside him that meant that he wasn't coming through to pure werewolf, that he was another kind of shapeshifter, the Kanema, which is slightly more evil and slightly less controlled by the person's own mind, if you know what I mean. And obviously the Kanema can be controlled by another person, which is a massive problem, hence the entire plot of season 2. But you've got Derek, and he's kind of butting heads with Scott, being like, maybe Lydia's the Kanema, we've got to find her and kill her. Oh, maybe Jackson's the Kanema, we've got to find him and kill him. Like, he's, you know, he's really into the, you know, I suppose he's lived in this world his whole life. He's also kind of dealing with this stuff on his own for the first time, and he seems to think that the best way to, you know, eliminate threats is to kill them, which is probably relatively common in, you know, the harsh animal kingdom or of which he grew up in or whatever. So, you know, obviously there's Scott, you know, going the other way, and there's all of the bonding moments between him and Scott, and then him and Styles as well during this season, as they're kind of working together on the same goal. But how do you think the Kanema arc, like, kind of, I guess, affected Derek's growth, or you know, comparing him to kind of Scott getting to take a little bit more control of the situation, or just offering a different opinion or a different way?
Mm-hmm. I think it's twofold at this point, because first of all, Derek realizes that Scott has his own pack. It's not a pack of werewolves. It's a pack of, you know, whatever the hell Lydia was. We weren't entirely sure at that point. And then humans and hunters and all this stuff. And he was like, this guy wasn't even trying and he has a pack, and I bit 3 people, and, you know, I'm like barely holding on here. And I think, you know, that was an eye opener for him. And I think in that moment when he basically said exactly that, when he was like, I see that you have your own pack, he gained a lot of respect for Scott, because I think in his world, somebody who can be a leader so naturally has to be respected. And Derek definitely took notice. So I think that, you know, like you said, opened up his eyes a little bit, changed his opinion about things. The second thing is, I only thought of this really when I was writing this article, was why was Derek so insistent on going after the Kanema? And I think that it's because he felt a duty to protect Beacon Hills. And we see in at the end of season 3B, I'm pretty sure, he, you know, talks to Scott about being like, you know, that's your job. Like, I realize now, I talked to my dead mother and she's like, you know, this is something that you can do better than I can do. But back in season 2, I think Derek, whether it was purposeful or not, because it was never addressed, maybe it was just in the back of his mind, was like, this is my home, I need to protect it, this is something that my family has done for generations. Yeah. I need to continue this.
He's like, I am the last hail, and this was our job, and oh my god, I've got to do this. And, you know, that part of that is, you know, him tying into growing his pack as well, because they talked about the being an alpha, like having a pack makes you stronger and more powerful. I've always been curious whether that's meant to mean, or whether Derek interpreted it as a literal physical power. Like, it's like the more people you bite, the more like lives you get or something, if you know what I mean. Like, it does it up your does it literally up your like physical power bar? Or is it a metaphor that, you know, you have people to help you, that you're stronger that way? How did you interpret that, and how do you think Derek interpreted it?
I interpret it both ways, and I think that perhaps Derek did too, because it's true that the bond between werewolves, especially an alpha and his or her beta, is a very physical bond. I mean, Cora talked about how losing a member of your pack is like losing a limb. I mean, if you lose a limb, obviously your physical strength is going to go down, and it's going to be very painful. But at the same time, there's also strength in numbers. So just having one, two, or three more people is going to be a huge help, especially when you're up against a creature like the Canima. So it would make sense to me that he would think it would be both of those things.
Fair enough. We've always been very curious about the natural, because until Liam, none of Scott's pack is a natural werewolf bond, if you know what I mean. Like, it's all chosen, and we don't know how much, like, you know, physical, mental control or power that grants him, you know, except for genuine human connections. We've always been, a bit curious about the the physicality and you're thinking about the robes, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
We've always been curious about the traditional beta bond, whether that's people born into your family or people that you've bitten as a werewolf, and what it means to be a true beta, including whether there's a ceremony with robes and candles. But that's just our interpretation. We're curious about whether what the actual canonical interpretation is of that, and what people have thought about. Karen, why did you have to go there with the robes?
I didn't even say anything. I just laughed.
You thought it, and I knew. Sorry. Now you've derailed. Now we've derailed the conversation. So where were we? Season two. He ends up having, helping Scott, I guess, discover the Canima as Jackson and turning him back into kind of, were they attempting to kill him, or did they kind of know that what they were doing was going to help him?
I think they were attempting to kill him because I think it was a sort of like last-ditch effort kind of thing. And it just, they happened to time it correctly between what they were doing and what Lydia was doing, that I think it allowed him to literally be reborn into the werewolf. And, you know, it's sad. Obviously, we talked about it before that we never got to see more of that storyline, but I think the end of season two also brings us an important point where everyone sort of ditches Derek. I mean, Boyd and Erica go off. Isaac obviously starts becoming very loyal to Scott. I can't even talk about it. Oh, my God. But the big thing here is that when we transition to season 3A, we've got Boyd and Erica sort of gone, and then they get captured by the Alpha Pack. Erica dies. Boyd gets rescued. But Cora is also there. And once again, Derek is alone, but then comes in Cora.
Well, I was going to say, before that, one of the biggest factors of the end of season two, and Derek as an alpha, is that Peter comes back to life and he starts listening to Peter. Like, he starts being like, oh, good advice, guy that I killed, like, because I hated you. Like, great, great advice. And so he has kind of Peter in his ear, kind of, and, you know, telling him what, and obviously that's a big factor, like the Peter, Cora, and Derek relationship, like in season 3A is a really big factor, because they, you know, they're talking about the Alpha Pack, and Peter pretends to have all this info, or does have all this info, like he's got his stupid laptop that he hid in the stairs and everything. You know, like, Peter is you know, Derek has a lot of you know, big events in season two, like he fights Victoria Argent and then she dies and all of that kind of thing. Can you imagine if Victoria Argent hadn't died and she'd been Derek's beta? That would have been interesting.
Oh,
she would have yelled him and, like, snapped him into, like, you know, she would have, you know, she might have technically been a beta, but she would have been like, boy, what are you doing? And just hit him around the head and it would have been really good. I could have gone with that.
Me too.
Yeah, but Peter coming back at the end of season two and then sort of being in his ear about how to be an alpha and what to do and all of that kind of stuff. Like, that's not really the best. I'm not going to lie.
No, Peter has always been super manipulative. And I would definitely argue that Peter knows what's going on and he knows what he's doing. What he's doing is terrible, but he's very intelligent, very aware of the rest of the world and how other werewolves act. I mean, he's quite a bit older than Derek and a lot more seasoned. And although that's not good for Derek, I think that it's not terrible that Derek listens to him sometimes, as long as in the back of his head he's always aware this guy's probably manipulating me for his own purposes.
Yeah, that's true. And it's just really, it's kind of, I did enjoy them teaming up, like, quite a lot of the time, but I never knew how much Derek trusted Peter, if you know what I mean. Like, I never knew if he was like, oh, we have to help, you know, we have to get him to help. Like, but by season, like, four or 3B, he's totally like, you know, we don't like you, will you help us, if you know what I mean, which was beautiful. But I, at this point, I never quite knew how much, like, it always felt like Derek was kind of clinging to connections. You know, if anyone showed up and it was like, I have a connection to you, I have help for you, I have, you know, some merit of, you know, family or trust or whatever, like, he really clung to as many connections as he could. Because to me, he's just a little lonely puppy who does not know how to function. So yeah, I kind of understand that.
Well, like, obviously, you know, that is kind of funny and we laugh about the way that he broods all the time, but he lost everything, literally everything.
That's a very easy circumstance to manipulate someone in.
Right.
Very easy.
He lost everyone except for his crazy uncle. And I think given the relationship that he had with Peter when they were both younger, well, I think that Peter exaggerates that relationship. They were close and they did talk and they did hang out and obviously that they were, you know, related.
Yeah.
I think that Derek is of course going to cling to Peter a little bit because he's part of that family that he lost. But as time went on, I think Derek started embracing other people, began to trust them like he didn't do in season one, and realized just how crazy Peter was. So
yeah.
I think
he was really hung out, you know, hung up on the fact of, like, family, blood, hails forever, etc.,
exactly.
You know, and then he was like, well, maybe nah, though, you know what I mean? You know, I could trust Peter, or alternately, I could love myself, you know what I mean? But then obviously Cora is another family member who we never really understand why she survived or who was looking after her that whole time, if you know what I mean, like, you know, from ages 11 to 18, like, and there's questions about whether she's trustworthy, whether she is coming from a good place or not. Like, Peter actually has a pretty genuine conversation with her, which I think raised good points, because he was like, if it was me, I'd totally be evil by now, basically, is what I got from that conversation, about whether Cora is worth trusting. But it shows that, you know, she's there and she kind of is able to give some light on Derek's backstory, especially his relationship with Peter, which she talks to the others about. So in season three, we do find out quite a lot about his past, and all of that kind of stuff with his family and his, you know, relationships prior to Kate. He's had a fun romantic history, has Derek Hale.
Boy. Yeah. I think season 3A was a huge season for Derek in terms of him finally coming into his own and realizing his place in the pack and in the world and his responsibility as a werewolf. And I think, you know, the catalyst for that was obviously Cora. I mean, she came in and she's the one that helped to explain, along with Peter, Derek's backstory, the reason why he has blue eyes. And all of that is, of course, related to Paige and having accidentally killed her, bitten her, and, you know, with the hopes that she would become a werewolf. Obviously, Peter manipulated him. He's been doing that forever. But I think, considering, how old was Derek back then? I mean, he was like 16,
14,
right?
Or 15, I
oh,
think.
Oh, younger than that? Okay.
I think 15. If we're going to track the like,
oh,
the
that's time, right. We don't know his age.
The timeline's very difficult. It's like, you know, because Cora, we never got an answer to, by the way, being like, you know, Stiles being like, how old are you? And she's like, 17. And Stiles is like, see, that's how you answer a question. And she's like, yeah, in years. But like, what does that mean? Like, what does that even mean? I don't understand. Like, Derek's first driver's license that we see put him at about 23 in season one. But again, like, that could be a time, you know, that could be a canon issue, or, you know, it could be that they pretend that they're younger than they are because they age slower. Like, it's very difficult to actually pin that down. But look, we've estimated if he was still in school when the fire happened, which seems to be correct, we've estimated that he was about 15 with Paige and then maybe 17 or 18 with Kate Argent, with, you know, kind of her manipulating relationship of him. And so with Paige, it was definitely the first girlfriend, first love, I'd say 14, 15 years old. And like, you know, he had the whole like, oh, can I, you know, tell her about what I am? Can I make her a werewolf? Peter, I don't know why. I don't know why Peter tried to make him, like, why, who gained in Peter getting Derek to get an alpha to turn Paige? Like, what, he manipulated him into that, but why? Like, who gains?
I think that Derek was a golden boy when he was that age. I mean, he was kind of like the perfect guy. He was popular. He was, you know, kind of this all-around jock, sort of lovely.
Funny,
I mean, he
cocky,
could, yeah, he could kind of be a jerk sometimes, but definitely golden boy material. And I think Peter just wanted to take him down a peg, and he did do that. I mean, look at everything that's happened to Derek since then. I mean, obviously not everything had to do with Peter, and it didn't all stem from what happened with Paige, but that was the first step in a long line of things that went terribly wrong for Derek Hale. But I think that it made him realize the consequences of his actions a bit more. And I think it sent him down that spiraling arc of, you know, being so sad and so brooding. And I mean, he was okay. He was like 14 or 15 and he killed somebody that he loved.
Mm.
You know, I mean, that has a huge impact on you. So it's no wonder everything that he's been through and how he's reacted to all of that since then.
Yeah. Let's talk about if he hadn't killed Paige. Say he had not killed Paige. He probably wouldn't, you know, if he'd managed to sensibly either tell her about being a werewolf or not tell her about being a werewolf and keep dating, he probably wouldn't have dated Kate Argent. Therefore, she wouldn't have got close enough to him to burn his house down. He wouldn't have reawakened the Nematon, which meant that he wouldn't have brought Jennifer Blake back to life with the Nematon's powers and all of that kind of stuff. And Scott never would have become a werewolf, probably, because Talia would be alive, or if she died, you know, Laura would be an alpha and the whole Hale family would still be functional, possibly. So if Derek had not killed Paige, Teen Wolf would never happen. Like, the show would never happen, if you know what I mean. And so it's certainly a very big catalyst.
Let's point out the real fact here, though, that if Peter had never manipulated Derek, he never would have killed Paige and nothing would have happened. Let's not make
so
this
everything
Derek's
is Peter's
fault. Yeah, definitely Peter's fault.
Yeah, but I'm sure Derek blames himself for everything.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt.
Yeah.
Now,
the
other thing in season 3 that I really want to talk about that is probably, it is my favorite Derek Hale line and moment, is when Cora gets sick and Derek has to give up his alpha status in order to save her life. And he has no issue doing this. Now, Peter obviously was helping him along the entire time, kind of nudging him in that direction. But it was a very conscious decision on Derek's part. And he specifically says, when he's about to do this, I don't care about power, not anymore. And I think that this is when everything clicked for Derek and when he started on this new path and when he it was the first steps to becoming the Derek that we see now at the end of season 4.
Well, it's certainly the most useful thing he did with his power as an alpha, you know what
yes.
I mean? and I think he kind of realized that maybe this is the only reason why I ever had this power was so that I could do this, so I had the capability to do this, and then he kind of realized that it was never going to be really something that worked out for him in any other way. And what else happens in season 3? They're going up against the Alpha Pack the whole time and the sacrifices of you know, which turns out to be his girlfriend, Jennifer Blake, which is another great romantic choice on the part of Derek Hale. And there's lots of controversy about that relationship, about whether he was part of her magic plans or if it was a genuine relationship on the side where she was deluding herself that she was normal, basically. And I'm kind of more in that camp, that she was kind of deluding herself that she was normal and that she had a connection to this guy because he brought her back to life, not that he was, that she was doing, sex magic on him, if you know what
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, I mean, fandom is divided on that point, but everything I've heard from the cast and everything from mm-hmm. Haley, from the writers and creators, was that she genuinely loved Derek, that Jennifer mm-hmm. loved Derek, and that I think he was sort of part of her plan in a way that at the end, you know, he wanted him to help her, but mm-hmm. I don't think it was ever a manipulative sort of haha, you know, I tricked you this whole time sort of thing. I think she really did care about him.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of her delusion, which we do definitely see towards the end of her breakdown, if you know what I mean, about, you know, the crazy choices that she has made. She kind of deluded herself into thinking that she was having a normal relationship with this guy mm-hmm. And that kind of thing. Yeah, kind of I don't know, you know, bad, evil people with crazy plans have genuine romantic feelings. That's a thing that happens. And, yeah, I think that's sort of what was going on. It doesn't mean the relationship was super good anyway, but, yeah, I don't think it was, the sex magic that people have discussed.
Yeah.
Basically. I don't know. And you know, he does have kind of a functional pack going on for a little while there. He has Cora. They get Boyd out of, you know, werewolf prison or wherever they're keeping him. You know, we've got, you know, Isaac, who's kind of flitting back and forth, but he's working with Scott's group. He's got Peter attempting to be helpful because there's nothing better to do. And so he has kind of a functional pack, and he's getting to this point where he might be okay. And then they make him kill Boyd as well, which was... gotta be a real blow, you know, gotta be a real low point in one's life, I suppose, given how you're meant to feel when your betas die.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically cutting off your own arm. It's not gonna be great.
No, and I feel like that we, you know, the show doesn't necessarily have time to spend throwing back every episode to everyone who's died and how much that's affected everyone. But I feel like that's something that probably will really affect him, even in the physicality that we've talked about of the beta relationship, that's probably something that he is going to carry for a long time, and he's very, very distressed by it as well. And so that I think is the tipping point for Derek, knowing that he is absolutely hopeless as an alpha, basically.
Yeah, and so by the end of season 3A, he's, you know, not an alpha anymore, and when season 3B begins and he continues on his journey, this is where we really see the beginning of Zen Derek, which, you know, again, we laugh at and we think it's hilarious, but it's also a really great thing considering how he was in season one and how much, like, how aggressive he was. And now he's sort of, I feel like he's more worldly. He sits back, he thinks about things a bit more. He has great advice to give to Scott, who throughout this season and season four goes to him for advice. And I think that that relationship is really interesting. But the big point here is that after talking to his dead mother, he entrusts
lovely and normal.
He entrusts Scott to look after Beacon Hills. He realizes that Scott, as the true alpha, is going to be better at that than he is. I mean, Derek's not going anywhere. He's still there. He still feels very strongly about Beacon Hills and wanting to protect it. But he realizes that Scott's power and leadership skills are above his own, and he's quite happy to, I don't want to say take a back seat, because I don't feel like he ever took a back seat. I just feel like he recognized somebody with a higher skill than him, and he accepted that, which not everybody could do.
Well, he was trying to be like everything, like this power and everything like this. And season three, it's more like he realizes where his strengths lie, and his strengths lie in being relatively good at fighting and also being a giant nerd. Like, so he's able to be around being like, she's a kitsune, duh, without having to be like, I'm making the plans for everyone, if you know what I mean. Like, he's able to contribute what he's good at, which is, you know, he's relatively good at physical defense, and he's really well, you know, well read and knowledgeable about the supernatural world. Those two things together don't necessarily equal awesome leader who should be an alpha. They are very helpful to someone who has the natural leading capacity like Scott, but doesn't know really too much about either growing up learning, like, you know, physical fighting, or growing up knowing anything about the supernatural. So he's able to kind of be that, like, Spock to Scott's Kirk or something like that almost. It's, you know, the kind of person who's like knowledgeably immersed in the stuff, whereas the leader might not know quite exactly all of the facts. And I think that that's like a really good, you know, really good role, a really good dynamic, and something that Scott needed. Otherwise, he might be flying blind a bit.
Yeah, and one of my favorite consequences of this whole situation now is how Derek seems to trust people more. I mean, when you're not the alpha, you don't quite have to worry about whether or not your betas are suddenly going to mutiny or, you know, anything like that. You don't have as much pressure on your shoulders. So he's able to look at situations more objectively, I think. Mm. And the fact that he trusts Chris Argent, of all people, I mean, their friendship is incredible. Definitely a highlight of season 3B. We've talked about this on the podcast before, but Chris Argent, you know, Kate's brother, like, him trusting Chris is a huge neon sign of how far Derek has come.
Yeah, I think that's really true, like, really, really important. I think part of it is him as well. It's just time. It's like, yes, everything he's been through in that time, but, like, he's grieving less and growing up. And, you know, he's not that old. He's not a fully formed adult, you know, at the start of the show, even though the kids are kids. And he's growing up, and just time is doing its work in helping him to, you know, chill the hell out and get a handle, an objective and rational handle on his feelings. And I mean, he probably also grew up knowing a lot about the concept, like the legendary werewolf Jesus concept of a true alpha. So when he knows that Scott becomes one, you know, I think that that's a really big, you know, a really big sign for him that, you know, okay, basically, you know, Scott has what it takes and is inherently going to be trustworthy because he's werewolf Jesus. Like, you know, I think that that's got to be, that's, that, you know, that's like being told basically that, yes, this is objectively the goodest good person ever. So it's okay. You can, you know, you can be open with him and trust his judgment. Yeah. I think that that's probably a big thing for him.
And that happens with the twins. Derek convinces the twins to stick with Scott. And for Ethan, I think it's a lot easier. For Aiden, not so much. He was much more the bad brother, and he struggled with that. And we know his relationship with Lydia was rocky because of that. And the fact that Derek was the one to be like, look, you have to trust somebody. And if you're going to trust anyone, trust Scott. This is the guy that in season one did not trust Scott at all and thought this kid was ridiculous for being so obsessed with Allison and for kind of having his feelings all over the place. But now he's realized how good of a leader Scott is, and he's helping Scott gain more PAC members. You know, I don't know if the twins were ever technically part of his pack, but definitely part of the group that helped. And the fact that Derek's sort of the one out there being like the liaison is, you know, kind of ridiculous to think about, but also really exciting in terms of his character arc.
Yeah, I love it. It was just a little moment of like joy and validation and happiness every time that happened in the show. Like every time you're watching the show and Derek does something like that, basically, this little moment of like him coming into himself in the way that we'd been wanting him to, and or expressing trust or affection or, you know, anything like that. It's just this little like moment every time you'd watch it. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
I told you I would giggle.
It's okay. It's okay. We're all giggling.
Okay. So yeah, we're at 3B. Lots of Derek and Chris, and lots of and it kind of all ends with, I mean, the beginning of the season kind of ended with him in a terrible place, which was strapped to a wall being electrocuted. And then
True.
He was rescued by Brayden. We never quite found out why. And then the end of the season ends with him in a shootout with someone who, you know, is very heavily implied to be Kate Argent. And then we later found out that it was, in fact, Kate Argent in going to season 4. So we had a great season, but it started and ended quite badly.
Yes. Yes, it did. season 4, I think, is another huge one for Derek, because he ends up in the very beginning losing his identity, basically. First of all, and Natalie would not let me forget about this, baby Derek regressing back into teenage years. And
the whole pack goes on a road trip to find Derek because they love him so much.
Yeah, basically. And obviously the whole thing with baby Derek was both hilarious and amazing, but I think, you know, the big thing here is that he's losing his powers. Derek Hale, who is a born werewolf who has only ever lived his life as a werewolf and grew up in that society, is losing his powers. Who is he when he's not a werewolf? And that's something that he really had to ask himself.
And, I mean, the whole waking up at the, you know, when he regresses, like, to age 15, like, mentally and physically, I can't remember. When he met Kate at that age, like, when he kind of, because Kate, I don't know how she does it, but she, you know, she sends him back mentally and physically in her magic South American coffin. Like, we don't know how she does it. But when he kind of, you know, she was, you know, trying to manipulate him at first because she wanted, like, stuff from his magical family vault and all of that kind of stuff. But I'm curious about why, correct me on this, when that happened, did he know Kate? Like, did he actually, had he ever met Kate? Was he like, oh my God, Kate? Or was he like, you're a strange lady that I've never seen before?
No, he knew her and he trusted her.
So it must have been when they were, like, together. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And remember we got the gross, like, Kate kiss with him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that added so much more horror to, like, the idea of... That added so much more horror to the idea of their relationship. It was super... I do remember that now, and now I want to die. I think I'd repressed it, Karen.
I'm sorry. I had
pretended it wasn't happening. Yeah, so all of that leads to him, first of all, you know, his eyes turning from blue to yellow, and they immediately like, oh, you're losing your powers. And I'm like, surely it just means that at first I was like, surely it just means that he was regressing to, he got reset, like he regressed to the time before he killed Paige, or something like that. But that isn't what turned out to be happening. Like, it turned out that, like, very slowly, like, his powers were becoming leached out of him, you know, since his regression to Child Derek. And I just... Can we just spend the rest of the episode talking about Child Derek and his charming egg rolls and how shocked Stiles was at how Derek's personality as a teenager and how Sheriff Stilinski reacted seeing Derek's fingerprints in the file and then looking at this kid? Like, that's worth the whole episode, right? Like,
I mean, it is. Maybe not this one. Maybe we'll do a special edition, let's just talk about baby Derek.
I suppose that's true. But all of that process of him kind of finding out that his powers are going, like, he's spending a lot of time with Brayden, who has come, you know, been hired basically to help them. And we get some great human grumpy Derek of, you know, him just being
him on the couch.
Baby. You think I know. I just love it so much. Like, I don't even think that's a sign of, like, oh, he doesn't have werewolf powers, he's acting more human. It's just he's becoming more relaxed and reverting to his natural personality rather than his, like, anger, grief personality, if you know what I mean. So yeah. I love his natural self, like his self once he unloads some of his baggage. And obviously a really good way to kind of explore that is him not having powers, but I think if he'd been not having powers during that time of having the anger, grief baggage, like if that had happened to him as well in that time, he would have gone like crazy. Like he would have been jumping off a roof. He would have been like getting 25 guns and like shooting up everyone. Like he would have gone nuts if he had lost his powers in the time when he was carrying more of that baggage, I think. If that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think Brayden had, you know, they were really good for each other, and I really liked their relationship because it was very give and take. It was very equal. On the one side, you had Brayden helping Derek figure out how to be human, and, you know, they had that really great scene where he's like, I'm learning how to bend the rules, and we all loved and swooned over that. And Derek, at the same time, inspiring her to be part of the team, to be part of Scott's pack, not in an official capacity, but just to help them and to trust them. I mean, this is the girl who always says, girls gotta eat, you know, she'll do anything as a hired gun for some money so she can survive, which is a fine attitude to have in her position, but, you know... For Derek to be the one to convince her once again, just like he did with the twins, to trust Scott is a big deal. And I think that him losing his identity as a werewolf allowed him to sort of look into himself even further and realize the type of person that he is without the werewolf.
Yeah, what he has to offer as a person.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. And I love who he is as a person. He has great interactions in the season with a lot of different characters, like with Liam, like when he meets Liam and, you know, sees what, and when he's all proud of Scott for being a big alpha daddy and, like, you know, when they're trying to deal with Liam and then, you know, him interacting with Malia as well, and just a lot of different characters throughout the season, and he's just so much more fun. I don't know, I love him so much like this. Not that I want him to like die from having no powers, but I really, really love his interactions in the pack like that. It's really great.
Yeah, and I mean, in the end, everything turned out for him okay anyway, right? He leveled up and he got to be a full-fledged werewolf, which is pretty flippin' awesome.
Yeah, and I love that. We learn so much about him. He's just like, I own this big building, and he's all chill. He's funny. He's just so much like he's just this really kind of, he's got this great sly humor, and he seems to genuinely like everyone. And he's having a great time, except for his lack of powers, if you know what I mean. Like he's not so chill with that, or the fact that everyone's getting killed on the Deadpool list. But he's just so great. He's just so chill about it. Sorry, this is such a useless conversation, but I just love it. But yeah, then he obviously, he gets wounded, by that final fight when they go back to Mexico. And apparently instead of dying, he kind of is reborn, as this full shifting werewolf, like his mother was, like a very pure natural wolf, which is really, you know, something that we learn about his family very early on, because Kate's body is kind of a full wolf, and he's not an alpha. We don't know what it takes to be able to have that natural wolf transformation, whether it's like, you know, a certain state of mind or anything like that, but whatever it is, he's like reached, like, I don't know, like werewolf nirvana or something. Like he's reached a higher plane of werewolfdom, without being an alpha, which is really impressive and really probably the best place for him to be. But he is now trotted off into the sunset as a beautiful wolf, and we don't quite know how that story is going to go for him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, jumping into season 5, we don't really know much about where he is right now, because Tyler Hoechlin will not be a series regular. And I know a lot of people are upset about this, and obviously I am too, because I love him. I love Derek, and I want as much of him as possible. But I think in a way it also kind of makes sense. He's a completely different person than he was in season 1. I think Beacon Hills still has a lot to offer him, but at the same time, he's, you know, reached this level of nirvana or whatever in the werewolfdom world.
Yeah.
And I think that it sort of makes sense that he would either be moving on or maybe be on the periphery of things. And I think that it's not a terrible thing to focus more closely on Scott. And he's still going to be there. He's still going to show up. A lot of the other people, like the parents and stuff, are not series regulars either, and we still see them plenty of times. So we're still going to get Derek. So with that being said, what would you like to see come season 5 with Derek?
I would like to know what he's doing. I would like to think that he is, you know, that he feels, you know, enough trust in Scott and enough trust in himself that maybe he could have a bit of me time, if you know what I mean. Like that Derek could have a bit of, you know, getting back to whatever he was doing in his life before everything went to hell. Especially when he knows Cora is alive and she's off wherever the hell she is. Like, surely he'd want to explore that. That he'd want to be like, hey, why were you hanging out in South America for 7 years and not telling me that you were alive? Like, and then they could go on, like, family road trip together. She could ride around on his back or something. what? I'm not saying this is stuff that we'd see on screen, but I would really like that. I wasn't too freaked out when I heard that he wasn't a regular, mainly for the same reason that you mentioned. Like, he didn't die, and it just felt like, you know, we know that Tyler Hoechlin has a really good relationship with everyone there. And I feel like that it's the kind of, you know, character that could drop in whenever they had time, you know, like whenever he had time, you know, whenever it, you know, worked for him, they could use him as much or as little as they wanted to. Like, as I watched Glee for 6 seasons, there were characters that like went away for 2 seasons and then came back as a main character like 2 seasons later, if you know what I mean. Like, it, as long as someone doesn't die and they're not like, I am done with Teen Wolf forever, I feel like that they have the capacity to come in and out whenever in a way that's not that big a deal, if you know what I mean. And I do feel pretty strongly about that. Maybe they'll prove me wrong, and maybe he's really in the middle of something else and he won't come at all in season 5, and then he might just come in one episode or something. But however little or much that we see of him, as long as he ain't dead, I feel good about his presence still existing, basically. So I'd like to know why the wolf thing happens, like the full pure wolf. Like, I'd like to know what that means for him, like, you know, as a werewolf, and what causes that and what it gives him the power to do. Like, can he still do the halfway shift? Like, can he still do the face and fangs? Like, or like to be a kind of a fighting werewolfy human, or could he only be in fights as an animal? And like, what kind of brain does he have when he's in that wolf? Is he his own brain in that body, or is he like, I am a pure natural wolf ranging in the forest, if you know what I mean? Like, maybe Derek will come for episodes, but it will just be the wolf. Like, he'll just sit in the corner and they'll be like, what do you think, Derek? And he'll be like, mm-hmm. And it will be, you know, like, because they can hire the wolf instead of Tyler Hoechlin. Like, true. Maybe that'll happen.
True. I think he could offer a lot to Malia, or maybe even the other way around. You know, she lived as a coyote for that long. Maybe he'll struggle with something and she could offer him advice. That would be a cute little interaction between cousins.
Yeah. I would like to see him nerding out with Kira. No, I'd like to see him getting ice cream, going to the beach, getting a pedicure, all the usual things that I want for the cast of this show.
I have a brilliant idea.
Okay.
I want him to be some sort of werewolf ambassador to, like, the hunters. I think given the fact that he can turn into this full-fledged, more pure form of werewolf and how far he's come, the fact that he's a Hale, which is obviously a very prominent werewolf family, he could do a lot of good by traveling around the world and working with, like, the Argents.
You want him to be a werewolf missionary.
Basically. Like,
spreading the good name of werewolfdom to all the non-believers.
Yes. Okay. I guess. That kind of makes it sound creepy and like he's converting them against their will. But basically, because I think that this show has shown us that hunters can be bad and they can be good, and werewolves can be bad and they can be good, but they each don't necessarily recognize that, except in this little town of Beacon Hills where they've crossed paths so many times in so many different ways.
Chris Argent should ride on Derek's back around the world and they could go around spreading the good word to people. Is that right?
I mean, this is not Twilight. They're not giant wolves where they could, like, carry you across the terrain and stuff. But, yes, basically.
He could ride on – she could ride Derek, but maybe not Chris. sorry. Look, I'm sorry.
I think, you know, he could do a lot of good given what kind of – mentality he has right now. I really want to see him giving more advice. I think that's a really awesome side, and I like the relationship he has with Scott, where Scott goes to him knowing that he's still the alpha and everything, but also knowing that he doesn't know everything and that Derek is in a lot of ways more knowledgeable about these sort of things, but also more of his deadpan humor, because God, Tyler is so good at that.
He's great. Okay, here's what I want. Imagine this. Imagine that they did hire the wolf for an episode. Just go with this. And they decided to make it a somewhat comedic / slapsticky kind of episode. Imagine like a pack meeting with the wolf just like stretched out on the floor. Like, you know, like in this, you know, like the way that dogs do in kind of like a, you know, a C shape, and that like Styles or Malia is like lying down, like leaning on him, like using his back as a pillow and like playing with his ears and stuff, or like Kira or someone, just being like, oh, and like just, you know, absently like playing with the wolf in the way that you would sort of like, a, you know, dogs on the floor and you're putting your feet on it and poking it and teasing it and rubbing its ears and stuff. Imagine them just doing that with like Derek in a meeting like that. That's what I'd like. Are you listening?
I need this. Please.
Yeah.
So although, how would they pull that off? Because that wolf is the real deal.
I think he could lie on the ground and be fondled. I think it'd be okay. Sorry. I'm not meaning this to sound like this. I just want some slapstick wolf humor.
I agree.
Like, and the idea of it being Derek in there getting all petted. Anyway, we can move on. from that.
Yeah. Let's jump into some feedback now with the conclusion of our discussion, our main discussion. Let's just go every other with these. I asked on Twitter why people loved Derek so much, and these are some of the responses that we got. So the first one's from Veronica at Bonnie's World 808, who says, I love Derek Hale because after everything he went through, he's still a fighter and a great man at heart. Yes, definitely, especially true by the time we get to the end of season 4.
Yeah. At Werewolves at Play says, his character has developed so much, like in the first season he wanted power, but now he wants to save people, which, yes, is nice.
At Teen Freakin' Wolf says, I always love how no matter how many times he fails, he always gets back up and fights. Derek has failed a lot. But that is a really good point. I mean, he does always, I mean, can you imagine losing your entire family and yet still going on? That
Scott was like crying and not able to heal his body because he thought Derek was dead.
Oh my God. You can't just spring that on me.
I was just like, remember that? That was a really good example of Derek failing. But yeah.
Oh.
He's almost died so many times. So many times. Yeah. Okay, so at STS Ashley Nicole says, I love Derek Hale because he did selfless act of saving his sister, which, yeah. I'd really like her to come back. I'd really like some explanation of, like, what the hell, where she was, why she wasn't around and all of that kind of stuff. I'm not sure if we'll ever get it, but she's out there existing, so I'm imagining if he's not in Beacon Hills, his first port of call would definitely be bonding with her.
Yeah, and she was a firecracker, and I really liked how she kept butting heads with her brother, and I think that was good for him in a lot of ways, but also good for her, especially considering what he's like now. I think that she would, not that she didn't respect him before, but she would definitely see him in a different light now than when she first saw him at the beginning of season 3A.
Yeah.
At Rave Wolf Zero says, I love how from the very beginning, when no one trusted or liked him, he would always put himself between others in danger. It's a big part of what made him a true hero throughout the entire series. Yes, I mean, that was obvious even from season 1. He was always a fighter, and he was always willing to get right in the middle of everything.
Yeah, and I think he probably got a lot of that from his mother, like his intrinsic, like, kind of, oh, those humans, you know, if you are there and you have power and, you know, a scrawny little human doesn't, you have the responsibility to, you know, look after them. And he, you know, did that many times with Styles and stuff like that in season 1, like, you know, they'd all be getting into the middle of it and then he'd like throw Styles in a corner and be like, ah. So, and I understand how that ended up in shipping, but I feel like he would have done that for any human throwing themselves into the circumstance because he has some sort of intrinsic nobility. I think noble is a pretty strong word, but I feel like it applies to Derek, and that he has that intrinsic sense of responsibility. Because
definitely
of his power.
Yeah. And because some of his family members were humans, so he was probably used to protecting them anyway.
Yeah, we never quite got the down low on how that worked, whether it was like he had brothers and sisters who just didn't get the werewolf gene, or if it was like all worked.
That must have sucked for them. Like,
well, do you think that they like get the bite, like once they turn 16 or something, that they were like, actually I want to be in, and that they could become a bitten werewolf?
Would they risk their lives? They could still die.
I don't know, like Talia might be like, no, we're not gonna do that or something like that, but I don't know. I'm curious about that whole like non-werewolf, like werewolves in the werewolf family thing. So
yeah. Well, that was pretty much it for our Derek episode. Do you have any last thoughts?
No, I just really like him, and I love him a lot, and I find him hilarious, whether it's someone putting him into an awkward situation, or his own humour, or just, I just find him really great. I don't know. I just like him a lot.
life. I agree. So, listeners, let us know how you feel about Derek. Let us know if you agree or disagree with anything that we said. Couple of little, like, housekeeping things coming up. We're going to be doing a Season 5 news roundup ahead of the season. We've also already got some pretty cool things lined up for this season, and we'll also be getting back to our weekly recaps, which is going to be really exciting. Don't forget that the show returns on June 29th at 10 o'clock on MTV, and then the second episode is airing June 30th at 9 o'clock on MTV ahead of the Scream premiere, which we're also covering on Hypeable. Brooke and I are going to be doing that, so hopefully that turns out to be a cool show and lasts a little bit longer than Eye Candy did, which only got like 10 episodes.
Is this one directed by, or like showrun by Christian Taylor as well?
No.
Okay.
Nope, this is totally separate, just also happens to be on MTV.
No.
And then, obviously, we, like we said before, we've got Indie PopCon coming up. Don't know how many, like, Teen Wolf-related stuff will be there, but, you know, check out our Instagram. We might post we will post pictures, because I'll be there, and Danya will be there, and if we spot anybody, like, in Teen Wolf cosplay or anything, we'll post it there, too. And then San Diego is going to be the big one, and Natalie, Danya, and I are going to be there, and it's going to be super exciting, so...
Yeah, it'll be crazy, but we don't quite know what's going to happen yet, but it's going to be great.
Announcements will be coming soon.
Yeah, we'll tell you everything that we're doing that's Teen Wolf related, or probably a lot that's not Teen Wolf related too, if you're in any of the same fandoms as us. But yeah, that should be fun.
Yep, very cool. So yeah. I guess until next time, bye guys.
Bye.
Band-aids don't fix bullet holes. You say sorry just for show. If you live like that, you live with ghosts. Band-aids don't fix bullet holes. You say sorry just for show. If you live like that, you live with ghosts. If you love like that, blood runs. 'Cause baby, you know we got bad blood. You know we used to be bad love. So take a look what you've done. 'Cause baby, now we got bad blood.
Let's talk about Derek. And I might giggle. But we'll see. What?
I empathize with that.
Good. Okay, cool. So I'm like, taps wristwatch, time for Isaac.